right, everybody, we're back. Mad Time Radio, coming at you from Skid Row Studios. I'm Rich, and we got Crail here.
Yes, sir.
Crail, tell who we got in the studio with us tonight.
Man, we got MMA referees galore in here today. We got Mike Beltran and Jason Herzog. Let me get my audience clapping going.
Yeah, don't forget our in-studio audience.
Oh, it's not working, man.
Oh, man. Oh, there we go. Oh. They're always a little late, but they always show.
Yeah. Nah. Yay. Hold on, we'll get this one for Mike.
All the ladies in the house.
I like that one.
Yeah. Right. Hey, welcome to the studio, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
We're sitting down with a couple guys that actually have the best perspective in MMA. We can't get any closer than this. These guys are in the cage, watching all of the action and the best perspective out there.
Yeah. So maybe we jump in on see how these guys got started, because we got two different guys in here. I don't know. I know Jason's got over 100 bouts he refereed, right, Jason?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Mike?
Several, but
yeah. Come on, Mike.
Got about 100 or more.
All right, cool.
I think.
All right.
One or two.
Yeah, and the best beard in MMA reffing right now.
A couple whiskers.
Actually, I think wasn't there an article? Didn't they do an article in Yahoo Sports about your beard? I think it was.
I think there was one on that.
Yeah, just the beard. Yeah, unmistakable. Mike, tell us about your start. I know. Actually, for one out there too, Mike is a training partner of ours, a good friend. From your training in jiu-jitsu, how did it lead into MMA reffing for you?
Well, got into MMA about 2002. Started out at with Eddie Millis and Jay Martinez at Shark Tank, and got involved in MMA. Back then it was NHB, No Holds Barred, and began some training there, and eventually evolved into really wanting to get into jiu-jitsu and learning the ground aspects of the game. Got involved and began training and started attending a lot of the shows. Obviously, the local shows around here were King of the Cage, and went to several King of the Cages out in Saboba, and saw the officiating there, and I thought, wow, you know what? I think I can do that. So I thought it was fun. So got involved.
All right, on. And now, back in that time, was this before MMA? Was this amateur at the time, or was this pro? Because I know there was before MMA was legal in California.
This was actually at the Indian Reservation at the Saboba Casino. So I guess everything kind of goes there, and just went there, started checking it out, and started supporting a lot of the local fighters that Joe Camacho, Charlie Valencia, and a lot of the guys that were up and coming from that era. It eventually evolved into bigger and better things. And saw myself. I said, I think I can do that. And my real first professional fight refereeing was in Tijuana, in TJ. So if you can referee in TJ, you can referee anywhere. So
why is that, though?
Well, the show I did, I actually went out there with Larry Landless, and went to a show at Baby Rock in Tijuana, and refereeing there, the fight doctor was buzzed. He was drunk. It wasn't as controlled or regulated like we have with the Athletic Commission and all the all the regulations that we have in place. But it was definitely an interesting experience being in Tijuana and refereeing there with all the local fighters from the San Diego and SoCal area, and figured out how it kind of was there, and eventually evolved and got into the Athletic Commission shortly after that.
But why is it so rough out there? Is it just because, if the fight doctor's drunk, is it just because a bunch of stuff's going on that's not professional enough? Or what's the deal?
Well, that particular show was quite interesting because, well, with the Athletic Commission here, we have inspectors in the corners in the keeping an eye on the fighters, and obviously the rules meeting, then the inspectors keep an eye on the fighters, and is a level of communication that we're pretty tight with all the inspectors, because we all work together and the Tijuana show was kind of like you kind of fly off the seat of your pants, so there was really nothing there. It was pretty much not really structured. Okay. And And then, of course, you need, you know, you rely on your fight doctor to keep an eye on you. Well, that fight doctor that we had was completely drunk. He was chasing the ring girls around and falling off his stool. And it was, you know, I think it was quite comical at the time, you know. But I says, well, this is how it's done. And then, obviously, when started with CSAC, with the California Athletic Commission, it was that kind of stuff doesn't fly.
Yeah, a little different.
A lot different, yeah.
How about you, Jason? How'd you get started?
Kind of the same as Mike. I got started, I used to watch WWF. I didn't even know what, I was 20, so that was 13 years ago. I didn't even know what MMA was, and I had never seen the UFC. And then I was watching the WWF, and I saw this guy, Ken Shamrock, and he had the Lion's Den Submission Academy. And I just kind of thought about it, and then I was in Chula Vista, and I saw, oh, hey, there's Lion's Den Submission Academy. I'll go in there. I'll see what these wrestlers do. There's no wrestling ring. I'm like, what is this? And so this little muscular guy, he's like, yeah, we don't do that here. We do submission wrestling. I'm like, oh, what's that? And his name was Robbie Kilpatrick, and he's like, yeah, you know, it's when it's just like wrestling, but you have submissions and all these holds and things. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I don't think I'd really like that because, you know, I'd get mad if somebody's on me. And he's like, well, you can get as mad as you want. If you can't do anything about it, it doesn't really matter. I was like, oh, well, that's a good point. And so then I came back and just started kind of, the only time I could train was in the middle of the day. And that's when the fighters trained. And so I, you know, it didn't work out really well for me right away, but progressively get better and better, and then never really wanted to fight or anything, but then just got into, I eventually did take fight, and I got injured, and I was like, this isn't really for, I don't know if this is for me. You know, you kind of start questioning it, but I still love to train, and one of my training partners down there was like, hey, you know, I'm going to put on an event. Why don't you referee? I was like, all right, I'll referee. I still hadn't even seen a UFC then. And he's like, hey, it's the same rules as the UFC. And I'm like, okay, what are those? You know? And this is, you know, still 10 years ago.
Where was this at?
This was in TJ.
This is in TJ.
Baby Rock. Baby Rock is like where you do your...
Okay.
Baby Rock's where you do the duty, you know, when you're in TJ at the time. Now they're all around. The auditorium down there is big. But yeah, I just did a couple small shows, and you were... You know, there was only a show every other month, something like that. And then you would do one or two. Larry Landless was a big one down there. You would, you know, you'd help set up the ring. You'd do whatever you could just to get a match. You were just excited. And that's how it started for me. Like what Mike was saying, if you can referee, if you can officiate, if you can referee, if you can fight down in TJ, you can do it anywhere. Like there are just so many distractions. So much. People are on the ring. People, I mean... It's
beer.
Yeah, it's the craziest thing. They want a whole
alcohol abuse.
Really?
Why you have your beer?
When a whole auditorium full of people are wanting to kill you, that helps you kind of focus on.
You're like, I might want to give this guy with the Mexican flag a couple extra.
Seconds.
Would you say that it was really because people back at that time didn't understand the rules of MMA? They, you know, were boxing fans really, and they wanted to see, you know, something different.
Yeah, you know, I think it's kind of hard to say it. At that time, everybody was so drunk. I think they just wanted to see two people beat each other up, and they didn't really care how it went. It was just kind of dysfunctional in that sense. So I don't really know if it was education was kind of lacking or just the fact that it was a Mexican guy. A lot of, you know, there's a big kind of disparity between you'd have locals down there, local Mexican guys, and then, you know, in the United States, we have better training up here at the time. And so... You know, it wasn't really fair, and if a Mexican guy lost, wasn't so good.
Yeah. Did you ref any fights at Saboba?
I didn't.
Oh, no. You didn't? Okay. Because yeah. I know we used to, that always comes up in our shows, because we used to go back there back in the day when it was, I mean, pretty good venue. I mean, to put on some pretty good fights and pretty good shows. A lot of famous guys that are up in the UFC now. Yeah. Like, you know, I used to see Rampage and Joe Stevenson. And all those guys.
Charlie Valencia.
Yeah, Charlie.
The Rampage, the first Rampage, Marvin Eastman.
Eastman.
Yeah, and you're like, who's this guy that's howling with a chain on?
And what
is
he
doing? Yeah, and there it was. Yeah.
Good old Marvin. And I just remember for that elbow.
The hatchet. Oh, no, the knee.
Oh, it wasn't a knee, yeah. Bad, right?
Looks like somebody hit him in the head with a hatchet.
Yeah.
And also, everyone, we are joined by another in-studio guest. We have Steve from Fight Me Clothing here.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Playing Sharu.
There she is.
Shout out to Sharu.
Yeah, with a Q.
Silent, though.
Exactly. Yeah, don't say it.
Yeah, so I know TJ has always been, you know, big for you know, fighting and you know, boxing and stuff. And going down there myself personally, watching the Muay Thai fights, it seems like MMA is just getting really, really big down there. And there's a lot of good, you know, fighters coming out of that area. What do you think of how it's changed now? Have you been back to TJ recently or?
I did go back to Tijuana for some shows. It's been a while. I kind of keep my distance from Tijuana now because all the violence, all the nonsense that's going on down there. It's just my opinion. I don't think it's really that safe anymore. But that's just my opinion. Doesn't mean it's gospel. It's just a safety issue for me going down there with all the stuff that's going on there. But it does provide a lot of opportunity for a lot of fighters to get their experience and exposure in TJ. But we have so many shows down here in SoCal and all over California, all over the place now that you don't need to go down to TJ and fight down there. You can do it out here in SoCal or get your experience through the amateurs like Camo and work your way up the ranks to the pros.
Yeah, you guys were just at an event yesterday too, right?
Yes, sir, we were. All of us were.
Yeah, what event was that you were at yesterday?
That was actually
That was a leader question, Mike. You're supposed to just answer that with the venue.
Yeah, it's chaos in the cage, clown.
Don't start sweating over there, Mike. Come on.
So when MMA started, you know, becoming you know, legal in California, I know there was a lot of controversy with, you know, the reffing at the time. A lot of people were saying these boxing referees were brought in to officiate, and they really didn't know a lot about the sport. And what was your view on that? You know, back in that time when you were, you know, transitioning.
Oh, you know, I probably felt the same way at the time. There definitely was an education disparity versus as far as officials what there is now. But at this point, you know, people, even if they didn't have any direct experience with MMA, they've either been involved with or seen so many events that, you know, they kind of have a gist of what's going on. So whether they were, you know, grapplers before, ever wrestled before in their life or didn't, you know, they have there are a lot of people that are just casual fans that have a really well-equipped kind of skill set to being officials if they wanted to be, and that's good or bad, but it is what it is. So at that point, I probably agreed, but now, you know, it's definitely changed since then, and it's a dynamic sport. Things change; they change all the time, and so do the officials. Officials kind of have to adapt. So I know
Mike trains, but maybe we'll ask: do you train?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you train in?
I'm mostly a grappler.
You are okay. So,
yeah.
Do you think that that helps you when you're reffing a fight, though?
In my personal opinion, I think the hardest part about refereeing or officiating in a match is kind of knowing what's happened, the intricacies of what's happening on the ground in the clinch. And then the striking, you can kind of fake the funk, you know. If you can kind of like, oh, hey, I know this guy's obviously winning. But when it's on the ground, if you don't have a good kind of idea about what's happening, you're eventually, people are going to figure it out, and you're going to make some big mistakes. So.
Yeah. You feel the same, Mike?
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. I agree.
Especially when it comes to like setting stuff up from, you know, half guard or side control and stuff like that. Where, I mean, I just watched a fight the other day where the guy was going for a Kimura and they stopped him and stood him up. I was like, ah.
Yeah, you definitely have to understand the ground game, and I think it's important that you if you're going to be an official, get involved in the sport, you need to train and grow with the sport, because it changes all the time. It's very dynamic.
Yeah, there's probably a lot. I guess most people think you guys are just in there watching two guys fight, like you were saying, but there's a lot more going on. You got to make sure, because you always see refs looking at the guy's eyes, or, you know, can you hear like hard punches when you're in there? Can you hear them? Like, oh, that was hard.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You hear everything.
Yeah,
ligaments tearing. You know, you hear everything.
Yeah,
everything.
Yeah, it's just like everybody here is trained. You know, when you're training with your friend, and it's like, oh, I felt that. You know, you're that close, and you see the same thing. You see the differences in the fighters that you really just can't pick up when you're in the audience or when you're watching it on TV. Like, you can see a fighter starting to kind of break. You can see the other fighter building momentum. You can kind of tell, and that's where you'll start to move in. And they're like, "Why did that ref do that?" Well, there were a bunch of reasons that went into it.
So. I always look at it. I remember maybe it was I think maybe Herb Dean was a ref, but when Frank Mir broke
Tim Silva's
arm, right, and then he stopped it, and everyone's like, "Oh, come on!" Right, and then they show the replay, and you see that bone going.
Right, yeah. Absolutely.
Right? You're like, okay, man, and that ref was right there. He was on top of it, right?
Yeah, Herb was right on top of that. Yeah.
But most people looked at that fight before the replay and was like, oh man, he stopped it for no reason, right? Because as a fighter, guys are like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, with the adrenaline pumping and everything, a lot of these guys seem like they're just going to keep going, and you don't realize how hurt they are.
Well, absolutely. And you look now how much the sport has evolved and how educated the public is or the fans are now from when that incident occurred to the way it is now and the way it's growing. You know, it's you can hear the fans cheering. It goes when you see a great setup and submissions coming and someone's going for it, and people are more educated now in the sport, and it's growing. People are training more and they're getting more involved, and it's everyone's growing in the sport, and it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. Watching a good transition or an escape and stuff, it does help, though, and it makes it funny when guys like, you know, Joe Rogan are commentating also and putting their two involved, you know?
Like Roganisms, right? We should call them Roganisms or something.
Sure.
It's funny. His name's almost synonymous with the UFC now. Now that they're on Fuel, you're like, ah, oh, dude, who's that dude talking, right? Yeah. Like, where's Joe?
Yeah, dude, Joe brings a lot to the table.
Well, and he trains, and he's got a passion. He's clearly got a passion for the sport. Some people don't like him, but, I mean, I think you can clearly... He's got a passion, and he's got his opinions, and sure. You can tell sometimes when he likes a certain fighter, and he even his heart gets broken. Like, oh, man. You know,
That's what makes him so good.
Right?
Yeah, it's all that passion. And
I like it. I just don't like it when he goes into, like, real deep, the 10th planet stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what he believes in.
When he's like, oh, he's pulling a zombie in there. I don't know what that is, you know?
What the?
You got to tell me about that later. What did you just say?
Yeah, he pulls up, like, all his crazy Eddie Bravo moves and stuff.
Yeah, but he is good. He brings a lot to the table, and his commentating is awesome. He sets everything up, and he's got a passion. You can hear it in his voice, and it's exciting. You know, it brings a lot of excitement to the fight, and the way he translates everything is pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, that guy, he did a lot of work for the UFC. He was one of the first, like, real legitimate people. He was on news radio at the time, and he's out there commentating for the UFC, doing leg work, probably not getting paid at all, and really helping build some momentum. That guy's given a lot.
Yeah, well, MMA. I know John Iwano, who we train with, he actually used to babysit Vitor Belfort, you know, before his first UFC, and he's got a picture with himself, Vitor, and like at the first UFC, and Joe Rogan's right there with, you know, his hair and stuff, like looking all young and stuff. I was like, wow, like a vintage picture of Joe Rogan, like the first UFC.
Joe Rogan's been around for a while. Like, he hasn't taken any professional fights, but I bet you Joe Rogan, he'll kick your butt. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't know.
World champion, taekwondo, like brown belt, for legit brown belt for a long time. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he doesn't suck, but... Yeah.
No, he wears headgear, though.
He does wear headgear. It's kind of hard to respect a man with headgear.
I don't know. I'm going to start wearing some because my ears are swollen.
I can see Joe's just going straight for the jugular, taking you out.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Nutshot.
Good luck.
He's going to pull some Krav Maga.
Hey, you know what? I had a question for you guys. I know, I think you guys, we were talking outside earlier, not only when you guys are refereeing a fight, but sometimes you also do like... I seen you, Mike, at a UFC where you had a nice fancy brown suit you were wearing one day, but you were doing like pre-check-ins for the fighters. So referees have to do a little bit of everything, right?
The referee does the inspections coming in and stuff. So that's what the referee does. We switch off as to who's going to do the inspecting. So if the referee handling the fight, he's inside the cage, and the guy who's off does the check-ins. And at that time, there was at the UFC, so all of us were there and we're watching what they were doing, and that was exciting to watch.
So how many referees show up to like a, how many referees do they have for like a venue? Like, do they say, hey, we got three referees and you guys are all rotating through?
Usually it's two.
It's two, okay.
It's two referees for just a regular show, but if it's a UFC, they have up to three.
Oh, they do, okay.
Yeah, the bigger, quote-unquote, bigger shows where they have more attendance. So,
but do they tell you, okay, hey, Jason, you got fights 1, 3, and 5
when you get to the
when event. You get there, right? And then so I guess on the other ones you're doing the check-ins and then vice versa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's
yeah. When cool. Mike and I work together, it's, you know, you're not reffing, you're check-in. You're reffing, you're check-in.
And how do they pick like guys to do like, you know, the main events and the really big cards and stuff? Oh, really?
No, I don't know.
rock paper scissors.
Yeah, rock paper scissors.
I'm not sure. Yeah. It just that's up to the commission. Commission's the one who decides, whoever the lead inspector, you know, whatever. I'm sure the promoter has some say, like, you know, I want Mike to do my main event, and they'll try to respect that. And, you know, the commission's still trying to provide a service.
Right. I mean, you know, just the difference is like, with grappling and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you know, just like people that are reffing matches, you know, like a black belt match, you can't have, like, you know, someone that's not a black belt refereeing, you know, in a certain level of experience to, you know, ref like a match like that and stuff. That's why I ask if there was like a certain, they look for people that have more experience to do those main events.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to throw a brand new ref to the wolves, so to speak, in a, you know, high pressure situation, right? Main event on pay-per-view, millions of people watching and such. And that's not because he couldn't or she couldn't do it. It's just because there are so many outside factors that let's set him up, you know, let's gradually bring him up.
Or they want to put a recognizable face behind, you know, also the event, right? You would think, you know, with the high level fighters and stuff.
Well, I mean, personally, I think that, I mean, you're a representative of that commission. So if, you know, if I go in there and I make horrible calls, they're like, you know, God, CSAC's terrible. These officials are terrible. They don't say, I mean, they say you as well. But if you're representing whatever commission that is, they want a good representative in there for them too. So.
Right.
So somebody wants to get into CSAC, what do they got to do? I mean, what's the qualification process?
Well, I think that all changed. It's different now. I guess you have to go through CAMO now.
Jason did it a different way.
Yeah, I did. I got grandfathered in.
Sure. Is that what you call it?
Yeah, but now, like Mike was saying.
Okay, so you got to go through CAMO now?
Yeah, yeah. Actually,
and then how about for the other states?
That I don't know.
Because, like, if you wanted to refer, have you just all your fights have been in California, Jason?
No, I've been fortunate. I've been able to go to a couple of different states as well. And typically there's like a professional courtesy. If you're already an official somewhere else and an event wants to bring you in, and they'll say,
okay,
you know, Mike to Texas. Texas would extend a courtesy and let him in. But if he wanted to be like a full time official there, he would have to go through whatever their.
Well, if they let Mike into TJ, they'll let him in anywhere.
That's right. If you want to, dude, I'm all good.
Yeah, he's good.
Go anywhere. Fight doctors all fell and everything was straight.
Hey, so tell us about the beard.
The beard?
Yeah. I mean, that's your thing, right?
I just don't like shaving. That's all there is to it. I don't like to shave. And
what do people say? What about you shaving your head, though?
Yeah.
I don't have any hair on my head.
Oh, my bad.
If I had a full head of hair, trust me, I wouldn't have this shit.
So it's growing in the wrong place, is what you're
saying. How long have you been growing that?
About 2.5-3 years.
6 days.
6 days.
But you've only been growing it 2.5-3 years?
2.5-3 years, yeah.
Jeez.
I trimmed it up and then I cut it off and then it just grew back again. So until I have to cut it. And then
that's your signature right there. Everybody knows you by that.
No, you know what he does is he uses that to get out of moves when he's training with them. Like, oh, dude, he got my beard.
Oh, my beard's in your mouth.
You ain't cheating, you ain't trying, right?
That's right. He's got to get fingers wrapped up in his beard.
Yeah.
How long you been training for, Mike?
Since 03.
03?
03. Yeah.
Did you do any other training besides jiu-jitsu? You ever do some boxing back in the day or any
of
that stuff?
Boxing. I started out boxing initially when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And I started actually at in Bell at Azteca Boxing Gym when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So that was, I was 12 years old. I started boxing, 11, 12 years old, and did a little boxing. And then got into a little bit of karate when I was younger. You know, that was like the whole Chuck Norris scene was in. Bruce Lee was, you know, stand up was awesome, and did a little karate, but never nothing really.
Show enough, huh?
Oh yeah, it was cool. The Last Dragon.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, did a little bit of that, and but nothing really. I didn't really stick to it, you know. And the school I went to, high school, they had no wrestling, so there was nothing there for us. It was at Garfield High School, so there wasn't really nothing there. And got into grappling, you know, and I just fell in love with the sport, you know. Well, obviously, you were the first person that I rolled with at the
Yeah, Mike and I share a really good story. You want to tell the story, Mike?
Absolutely.
Get close to the mic. I want to replay this when I get older.
Yeah,
slowly. Tell it slowly.
Krill and I have history, so this is actually a true story, and it was actually a very humbling story when I first started training. Actually, Joe Camacho, which is a very good friend of mine, is the one who was just telling me to come down to go train and get involved in grappling. And being a big guy, and back then I was a lot bigger, I was like, no, you know what? If I can't knock you out on my feet, if I can't get you out, then hey, I deserve to get my butt kicked. And I don't want to roll around. And I think that's, you know, that's just not my style. And eventually he broke me down. I went to New Breed. And Krail was the first person that I actually trained. I saw Krail and he had a white belt, and I figured it was kind of like a, you know, like taekwondo or some kind of karate stuff where, you know, we can actually just kind of, you know, roll with the punches. Well, I had no idea that Krill had a good extensive wrestling background from, where'd you wrestle, Oklahoma?
Somewhere,
yeah.
Streets.
Yeah, exactly. Street. Well,
wrestling on the pavement.
I rolled with Krill and really not knowing anything, and it just got straight punked. Took me down, slammed me down, and I just got manhandled by Krill. And
tell him how tall you are. What are you, like 6'5", 350? How tall were you back then?
I'm 6'2", and when I first started, I was like 245. And as opposed to the way I'm now, about
and I was only like 5'9", 130.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Krill
like
was 125. Yeah, so I rolled with Krill, and I mean, it was very humbling. And obviously, I'd seen the UFC, I'd seen what Royce Gracie had done, and I've seen all the what the Brazilians were doing and what they brought to the sport. And but actually experiencing and actually getting put in submissions and holds and just getting raped, basically, was it was humbling.
Call that forcible entry.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, that's how I felt. So and. I signed up right then and there. That was my first experience, and since then, the rest is history, and we've been training ever since.
Yeah. And how did you find New Breed? How did you find Johnny? Through mutual friends, or?
Actually, Joe Camacho is the one that told me about New Breed. Yeah, okay. Joe Camacho told me that, actually, he was training, I believe, at Aloysio Silva out in Torrance, or the South Bay area, mm-hmm. and that was too far from where I live, and he told me it's a great school down here, and there's a bunch of good guys, and great attitudes, and, you know, everybody's there to learn and grow, and you'll have a great time with these guys. Obviously, I met Charlie Valencia and all these other wrestlers. And I went to New Breed, met John Iwano, who's our instructor, and Johnny Ramirez. And I just fell in love with the place. The guys are great. The attitudes there is no one's there to hurt you. You're there to learn. And they're my family there. You know, my kids have trained there, and. You know, they're my brothers there. I really love that place, and I got nothing but love for New Breed and the guys I train with, and the Krill story. I always tell that story because it's true, number one. And it was a very humbling experience to a smaller opponent, a smaller man, being able to take out a bigger guy and at will. And since then, it's been I've been growing since.
Yeah, a lot of us have that same type of story. I have the same thing myself with Monica my first day. In a triangle choke.
Oh, Monica's tough.
Yeah, and she used to triangle a lot of people, and I was a victim my first day.
Well, you've grown a lot. I mean, after you small, slimmed down a whole lot from when you first started out.
Yeah, so that first day, I thought I was going to smash this girl, and, you know, it was going to be easy, and next thing I know, she's wrapping her legs around my neck, and I'm like, what's happening?
Yeah, Monica's tough.
What's going on here?
Jason, hold on, buddy.
This isn't such a bad thing. Wait, whoa,
Jason, get your mind out of there, buddy.
Yeah, wait a minute, this hurts.
Jiu-jitsu's a funny thing, right? Like, you can be a grown man and have a little kid just, like, put you to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, what happened there?
Yeah, well, that same day, after getting destroyed by Krail, I rolled with Noah.
Little Noah
back then. He was 12 years old.
Yeah, shout out to Noah Tillis.
Yeah, yeah. Noah Tillis, man. Noah
Tillis, BJJ.com.
Absolutely. Noah was, I mean, think he might have been 12 or 11 years old. And after getting, you know, rolled up by all the guys at the school, I ended up, Mike, go ahead. Joe Camacho goes, or I think it was John Iwano, said, hey, Mike, why don't you roll with this kid? And it was Noah Tillis, you know, and I don't know, he's a goofy kid with glasses. I'm thinking, geez, okay. And Kid was all over me like a monkey, man, on my back, and just couldn't control. I just sat on him and just man strength and just held on to him till the bell rang. Oh, dude, I'm done. I'm going to get some water. I'm out of here. I grabbed my bag and took off. But I came back. It's a humbling experience, and I'm still here. And, you know, it was a blessing to discuss because I met all you guys, so it's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty funny looking at Noah now. The dude's like, you know, 21.
Hair now.
Yeah, he's like, he used to be a little kid, right?
Yeah, you know, he's still a good kid.
Makes you feel old.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. What about you, Jason? Got any cool stories?
No.
You didn't like.
He's got a lot of stories.
You didn't submit Frank Shamrock or anything?
I didn't. No, I remember. I remember the first time it was kind of interesting, like John Alessio is getting ready for his fight against Pat Miletich in this thing, UFC, right? Again, uh-huh. I have no idea. And he just like, that guy just put the wood to me. The first time, it was the first like sparring session.
What are we talking sports. About? What are we talking about, Jason?
The wood. What are we talking about, yeah, Jason?
Put the leather to you.
Put the wood.
Yeah, he just
explain that?
Beat
the family show, man.
Beat my butt. Yeah, severely.
What?
Like a Creole Mike Beltran type situation. Yeah, but... I don't know. Yeah, I haven't. There's like some young bucks coming up, man, that are just 9, 10 years old that are learning jiu-jitsu from 6 years old, and you're like, what the heck's going on here? These people coming up are pretty amazing. So
yeah, phenomenal guys. Yeah. Some excellent talent.
Yeah. Well, actually, even speaking of kids in jiu-jitsu, they think the kids Pan Ams were today.
Oh really?
Yeah, this weekend they had the kids Pan Ams.
That's awesome.
Cool. Enough for they can have their own event now, you know, for IBJJF. And
that's it.
Those things depress me. They make me feel old.
Yeah. I sometimes I don't even remember the movie I just went over, right? And you see these kids and you're just like, man, these kids are probably just retaining everything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, little sponges.
No job, no nothing. No, huh? Just, hey, I'm just going to learn jiu-jitsu all day.
Yeah. Or even some of them, you know.
I sit there and go like, hey, what do we just do?
You see videos and, you know, of like little kids too that are boxing. And they're just boxing with beautiful form and technique and, you know, just like little, you know, mini, like pro boxers, like, wow, you know. Yeah.
That's what's cool about Camel. We see the, you know, it's actually a blessing in disguise. We get to see the young talent coming up through Camel. And, you know, some of the kids that are coming up, man, are just phenomenal. You know, I mean, they're just the stuff that they're doing and the way they're growing and they go into the pros and we get to watch them from the beginning. And evolve into to what they're becoming. It's awesome. It's pretty cool.
Hey, do either one of you guys want to explain really quick what camel means in case somebody doesn't know what that means? Jason, you go.
Camel is the amateur mixed martial arts, and it's an organization out of California, and it's basically it's pretty much the same rules as the pros. Only difference is you can't do any knees and elbows to the head, and no twisting leg locks for the most part, and. It's 2 minute round, 2 minute rounds, and it's actually really good. It doesn't cater towards a grappler. So if it does, you take an opponent down, you have to actually, you know, get to work. But for the most part, it's there for to get experience, get in there and represent your school, and it's amateur, so it really doesn't affect your record at all because. You know, once you go to the pros, it gets washed away. So it just gets all the jitters out and the experience that you need and being fighting in front of a bunch of people. And it's a really good thing. They're really doing a great job with it. So it's a good organization.
Is there a certain number of rounds that an amateur has to have before they go pro? Because I know like in boxing, somebody was telling us they got to have like a certain number of rounds.
They were trying to put some like a mandate on it, like you had to have 10 amateur fights or whatever, but I don't think that they ever actually followed through with it. So it's just like a kind of a grading scale. If this guy has gone out there and completely shown himself to be or herself to be unable or ill-equipped to be a professional, they write that in a recommendation. When it goes to CSAC says, you know, hey, as an amateur, you didn't quite fare so well, so maybe we'll take this under advisement before we give you a pro license.
I think until the guys feel that they're regular, that they're ready to move on to the next level, they do so, and then they move forward. So I think it's up to the individual, and they move forward.
And what is usually the age ranges of people that are fighting that organization? You usually just get the young guys, or you get older guys trying to get experience?
There are some guys that we've seen that are under 18, but they typically put them under pancreation rules in the pros. But then as soon as they hit 18, they'll let them, fight the amateur MMA rules. And then from there on, you know, we've seen people that are 39 taking amateur fights. And I've seen, I think, 41.
He's actually been winning, too.
Yeah. Because 41-year-olds aren't able to win.
What's that guy's name?
You know, I don't know his name. I don't know his name, but he's definitely a crowd favorite.
Is he the guy that trains at Ring of Fire?
You know what? I think he is.
I think he is too. I can't remember his name, but yeah, he's on a winning streak.
Yeah, that's what's great about MMA, right? You know, you're sitting there, you're watching football. You're like, man, if I wouldn't have, blown out my knee in Pop Warner, I could have been something, right? MMA? No, yeah, you can go train, go find your local gym, go find New Breed. You know, give it a try if you really want to do it. Go for it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, but you can get hurt too. I mean, there's a lot of people that get hurt.
Of
sports? No, like a little neck stinger, they don't come back.
You know? Well, yeah. for those who don't know, could you explain real quick the pancreation rules? All I know is there's no contact to the face, correct? Or what else is there in pancreation rules?
Yeah, pancreation is, I mean, ideally you got to look at like letter of the law intent. And so the pancreation intent, and it changes a little bit. There's like SoCal pancreation, and I don't even think, you know, I'm not super familiar with all the pancreation rules, but that they formalized of pancreation.
Open hand strikes.
But it's open palm strikes, yeah. You're not allowed to strike to the face, no elbows at all. You have to wear headgear. You have to wear, I think they took off the shin guards. But ideally it is so that people who are under the age of 18 can participate in like a mixed martial art stylish event and not get injured. But the idea is again, you know, no striking to the head with at all, and then open palm strikes to the body, or to the body is closed palm strikes, things like that. So I'm not...
It's like a glorified sparring session is really what it is.
Yeah, but these kids are freaking...
And in camo, is it the equipment is still the same thing, like, you know, full MMA 3-ounce gloves and the rest, or is there more protective equipment involved in those type of fights?
No, the glove size is, I think it's 4.
Yeah, same. It's same, though.
You know, obviously, the difference between a camo and the pros is that they have to wear the rash guard. And just to make sure, so everybody knows that they are amateurs and they're not pros. So there's a lot of little things like that they have to do. But for the most part, it's pretty much like the pros.
I got that dude's name. His name's James Puncel. He's born in 63.
Yeah, that's the guy. He's on a roll.
He trains over at Rings of Fire.
He's a little younger than Mike.
Just kidding. So, Mike, tell us about your first dealings with the UFC as a ref.
Actually, I did not ref. I judged. And that was I judged that one, and that was it was a good experience. It was awesome.
Was that when we saw you all G'd up in that suit, in that brown suit?
Yeah, I did. I actually wore a suit and actually had to borrow a suit from my brother.
Oh, that's right. You need to tell us about that.
That was my brother's suit. Yeah, it was a good experience. It was awesome. Getting to see the obviously a bigger stage, definitely the you just go out and you do your thing, you call like you see it and you judge it and like what you're trained to do and what you know, but just being there was pretty awesome. It was exciting, and it was definitely something I'll never forget. It was a great experience.
And what were some of the other big organizations you got to work with?
I got a chance to referee Strikeforce, which was a pretty big show. That was in San Diego. That was awesome. Did Bellator. I worked with Jason Herzog on that one. King of the Cage. Done pretty much the biggest shows that you can do here in California. Done some pretty cool ones. And UFCs, I have not reffed that one yet and like to get there someday. Should be cool.
So you'd have to get into like more certifications and stuff for you to move on to Vegas, or... how does that work?
No, actually, it's just the way California assigns you. So if CSAC says, hey, you know what, we've got a show in Southern California, they pick from the regional referees in the area. And if it's down here, you'll probably have Herb Dean or Big John McCarthy or Jason Herzog. And we have a rotation that we go. So, your name comes up. Like last time, I think Larry Lamas did. And obviously, Larry... he's been around forever, so he finally got back and he did an excellent job. So we're happy to see Larry back in there. So hopefully the next go around they come to SoCal, I'll get the call and get the referee, and that'd be cool.
Right on. And Jason, how about yourself? Any big fights that really stand out, you know, in your memory from your past experiences?
Big fights that stand out. I don't know, man. They're all like big fights, right? Yeah. I mean, and that sounds like a cliche answer, but if any one of us has taken a fight, whether it's an amateur fight or a fight in the UFC, it's a big fight, right? It's your big fight. So I think the only difference between like the big shows, so you'd say UFC, Strikeforce, Bellator, is the fact that just maybe more people are watching and there's more energy in the environment, but they're just as big to everybody. So, I mean, some of the biggest fights that I remember the best are guys that you wouldn't even, like, you hear their name and go, who? But just some badasses. But I think Paulo Thiago Diego Sanchez was a pretty good fight that people would maybe recognize a little more. And that for Diego, this is a big fight. Him kind of getting back into it. He was coming back up to 70. And Paulo is like, you know, he's beating Josh Koscheck. You know, he's putting it to, like, this could be the next guy. And then he runs into Diego Sanchez, who everyone thinks is on his way out. And he got, oh, okay. Like, hey, maybe he's back.
Yeah.
And that was a fun fight. A lot of energy. The guys were, you know, not, they weren't cheating. They were just, you know, both of them are out there trying to perform the best they can, and you're just letting them do their thing. You know, it's nothing. You're just reacting. So,
you guys ever see guys during the check-in process where you're like, oh man, this guy's already done? I mean, you ever look at a fighter, like, sometimes you see guys and they just look scared already, right?
I think if they're going to get in there, first off, I give them a lot of respect for what they do. Stepping in there, number one, first and foremost, anybody that gets in there and fights and actually does this for a living, I mean, you got to give them all the respect in the world. There's some guys that I've seen there that probably had bad cuts, that they've had that they cut weight and they're a little dehydrated. Yeah. When they're getting ready to step in there, you know, it's like, hey, their game face is on, but you can tell they're a little dehydrated. And I think that's about it. But for the most part, I think they go in there to obviously win. Yeah. I don't think anybody goes in there to lose, but I think dehydration is something that you see.
Those weight cuts are big, especially when you're talking about 20 plus pounds on some of those guys.
Some of those guys do some sick cuts, dude. Yeah. It's like incredible. You know,
you see them the next time, you're like, what? Not the same guy.
Yeah, they're like walking zombies, man.
Swelled up on coconut water.
You know who's like that is Mike Whitehead. That guy, when he did an Affliction show against, I think it was it Bob Lou? No, maybe it was Bob Lou who he fought. I don't remember who he fought exactly. Day before weigh-ins, guy's got a six-pack. You're like, hey, this is Mike Whitehead. What happened here? Guy's got a six-pack, you know, 185, right? Next day, I don't know how he put on that much weight. No more six-pack, and you know, and then some. You're like, what the?
Six-packs are overrated.
Yeah, they are.
That just means you're hungry.
I remember Mike Whitehead. I don't remember him ever having a six-pack.
Yeah, look at the weigh-ins. Yeah, you'll see it. Yeah, not when he's fought.
That's pretty funny. Hey, so I know they got a lot of referees. They got, like, obviously we know Big John's, McCarthy's catchphrases are like, let's get it on, right? What's yours, Mike?
I just say handle it.
Handle it?
That's it.
That's it?
Just get in there and handle it.
You're not doing like the Rain Man dance before or anything?
No, I'm saying right. Get in there and handle it. That's all it. Right.
How about you, Jason? Anything over there?
I think I say fight.
Yeah. That's it?
Yeah. Nobody cares what you're saying. Yeah. You know, yeah. I think I goofed around with some other stuff once. And it's funny, Mike was thinking about it. He's like, you know, I'm not going to say my thing anymore. It's funny what becomes your thing, yeah. Right? You don't expect it to be your thing. But if you were going to referee, you would go over a little stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, a little exactly. Heart. Yeah, I heart you.
Yeah. you would have to kind of consider this. Like, what the heck am I going to say?
Hey, yeah.
Beat each other up or
yeah.
Do it or what?
But, you just go with whatever your personality is, you know, and the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, handle it.
Hug it
know?
Out, and then it was handle it.
Yeah.
Hug it out.
Yeah. Cecil does a karate kick, and that's
Cecil okay. Peoples is hilarious. Hilarious. That shout out to Cecil Peoples, by the way.
He catches a lot of flack, but he's a funny guy.
He's really
is. Heart of gold,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, he does.
You know Cecil. Cecil's he's a very good man. He's got a heart of gold, that guy. So, yeah. You know, he really wants
he's
to
He's
done
tons of boxing stuff, right?
Back kickboxing,
yeah. Yeah.
Kickboxing.
He was one of the original OGs.
He is OG.
You see some older pictures of Cecil, like, with Chuck Norris, and so you're like, what the heck is going on? The big afro, like, jumping 6 feet in the air. You're like, whoa, Cecil might be able to kick my, well, not anymore, but, you know, then.
I think Cecil kicks you, man. I think you're going to go down.
You think so?
Yeah, Cecil's still got
not
it.
Not anymore. Dude. I think that would severely hurt your shin. Let's be real.
That or Gene LaBelle getting a hold of you.
Oh, now, Gene LaBelle, even
Judo
now.
Judo Gene, yeah.
That guy, when he gets out of line for Sizzler, when they open early, he will come and, like, put it on you. He will grab you and, like, contort you in a funny position that you don't ever want to be in again. Yeah, at his age now, he is a bad.
How old is that cat, man?
I think he's pushing, he's got to be pushing 80.
Really?
I think 79.
And you think he can still throw somebody?
Oh
absolutely, easy. 100%.
We did a CSAC training thing a couple months ago, and he was down there, like, you know, pushing Josh Rosenthal's head through his sternum. It was pretty.
Yeah.
It was pretty unfortunate. Yeah.
Yeah. He still has it. He's a tough dude, man. Yeah.
And he came up back in the day too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's got like that legendary status.
Legendary status. I think he won, you know, won major tournaments in judo. I think in 57, 58.
When was that fight that he did against a boxer, and he was out there in his judo gi, like one of the first real MMA fights that you'd see?
Milo Savage, I believe that was. It was in Utah.
Yeah.
And it was the first actually documented MMA fight. and it was with Judo Jean LaBelle. And it was a boxer, and the boxer said there's no way that anybody can beat a boxer. And that was the word, and this guy was obviously a pretty heavy-handed guy. And I read Jean LaBelle's book, and he called, and Gene said, hey, I'll take you on, you know. And Gene obviously was a judo guy and a much smaller opponent. And they went in there, and they set it up, and Gene drove up north to fight him. I think it was somewhere in Utah. And they fought, and I think from what I understand, as the urban legend goes, he had brass knuckles in his gloves.
Who did?
Savage did.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, Milo Savage, I believe. And Gene choked him out, and right after he choked him out, of course, this is back then, it looked like people thought this guy was dead, you know, what Gene did to him. And then, of course, being Gene LaBelle, which is a name he's known for being the sadistic bastard, is what he goes by. And Gene, being Gene, you know, stepped over him and on him as he, you know, as he put him out. Of course, it started a riot because he fought this guy in his backyard. And being Gene, and, you know, Gene just don't take no crap from anybody, you know. And he didn't care. You know, he choked him out and walked out. Apparently, him and his brother and another guy skipped town and, you know, got their money and ran like bandits, man. But it was definitely a cool story.
It's a pretty good book.
Yeah, Gene LaBelle. He's got several.
Where did he grow up at? Where is he from?
Gene LaBelle's from here. His background, I guess his mother used to run the Olympic Auditorium. So he's good. Okay. You know,
right down the block.
Right down the street, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, Gene grew up in the whole, you know, the show business of boxing and entertainment, and obviously judo. And he grew up watching these wrestlers, and he got involved. And obviously, he had a judo background, and he just evolved into the sport and moved forward from there.
Well, too, I know he also had some training time with Newbird's own Sensei Blinky too, our judo coach.
Yeah, absolutely. They're buddies. They go way back.
Yeah.
That judo community is probably similar, you know, to jiu-jitsu and stuff, where it's like a small community. Unless you're in it, you think it's so much bigger, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, gyms are just like clubs now. They're not very big. It doesn't seem like very commercialized, you know, like jiu-jitsu is becoming, and like taekwondo and other stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And Steve, so how are things going over at Fight Me? I know you were out at the fights, was it yesterday?
Yeah, we were at Chaos in the Cage yesterday. And they went well. We had a good night of fights. We had good judging with Mike Beltran. Good reffing. But it was busy. It was busy. Yeah. We had a Fight Academy. You guys stopped by there last night?
No, we didn't get to make it out.
Keep going.
Oh.
Come on.
You were going to stop out there is what
I
meant.
Yeah. You guys were going to stop there.
We were.
But anyhow. We
got tied up in the studio doing some stuff.
There you go. Chaos in the Cage.
By studio, I mean bar.
Chaos in the Cage. Chaos in the Cage was good. I mean, we're going to have some pictures and hopefully some video taken from the event posted up on our website and Facebook soon. So you guys will be able to check that out.
Cool.
All right, on. Yeah. And so Jason, what are your plans still? Are you still looking to do bigger things in reffing, or has this always been like your full-time gig? Or
no, this isn't a full-time gig for me. It's just I wouldn't call it a hobby, but it's definitely something that I'm very passionate about. You know, when they say if you do what you love, you never work a day, and I wholeheartedly understand what people mean when they say that now. But with that being said, I think when you have to start looking at something like this for a source of income, it gets away from being something that you love and you're passionate about, and you can look at it and say, hey, maybe I'm just not that good at this anymore, and step away from into where, hey, I need to, you know, I need to put food on the table, so I have to do it. But as far as my future plans, you know, those are things I can't really control. I just do the best job I can when I'm in there, when I'm given the opportunity, and hopefully, you know, more things continue to come my way. But you just, I'm along for the ride, man.
Yeah, I think that pretty much holds true for a lot of things, because I know, like, I mean, I like going to the gym, and people are like, oh, you should work at a gym. But I think once you work there, it becomes your job. It doesn't become a hobby. Yeah. Same thing for like jiu-jitsu and stuff like that. If you start doing it like every day, all day, it just becomes like
a little burnout.
Yeah, I'm already obsessed with it as it is. I only go like 2-3 times a week. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely starts to become work, I guess.
So know? is there any full-time referees?
Yeah, I think there are a couple. I know Herb's a full-time referee.
Okay.
I think, you know, I'm not sure if Josh does a full-time or not. I think he does, but yeah. I'm sure there's a couple more.
Big John, of course.
But yeah. John's got his own gym, though.
He's got a gym and stuff.
Yeah, he's got John McCarthy, I think Herb, and maybe Josh, like Jason said.
And is Larry Lannis, is he still teaching submission wrestling? I know he was teaching for quite a while. He had Submission Factory back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Larry Lannis, man, he's a pioneer in the sport. And a lot of people don't know that about Larry Lannis. He's definitely one of the OGs in the sport. Goes way, way back and helped out a lot of fighters get to where they're at today. You know, a lot of people do not know that about Larry Lannis. He helped me out a lot in getting into officiating. He was a very big influential person, just like Big John McCarthy was. But Larry Lannis started with Submission Factory back in the day, and I think he still does have. Mm-hmm. I don't know where his gym is at now, but I know he coaches wrestling.
Yeah, at the high school.
Yeah,
Hammer High or something.
No, Bishop Amont.
Bishop Amont.
Okay, super nice guy though, because even when he had his gym out there on Valley, it was in the State of Industry, right?
Yeah,
right there. It was in the back. Super nice. You walk in there and he goes, "Yeah, come on in." You know,
it's funny because a lot of us that from the area here, you know, cross paths there. All of us roll there at one point or another. Herb Dean trained out of there too with Larry, Joe Camacho. You know, Charlie Valencia, Dave Rebus, a lot of the old, you know, this is the old wrestler guys. And, you know, a lot of guys we all train with today, one point or another, went through a Submission Factory one way or another on an open mat or whatever.
Yeah, he was the first guy I met when I was, you know, looking to, you know, to start training, you know, just my, you know, ground game. And I met him, and, you know, just to meet the guy in person, I was like, wow, what a huge character.
Larry Lannis was our hookup to get into, to clubs at the time it was the Black Angus.
Black Angus.
The Black Angus, man.
They move the tables out of the way. The little disco ball comes down at 11.
Was this before you were right doing doing Prime Cut with Oscar?
The Prime Cut Montebello, man. Yeah, the old school days. But
I used to work there.
Really?
Yeah, I used to, because the owner of that place used to own Gotham Bar and Grill in Southgate.
Southgate.
That's what it became after, right? It became, Prime Cut became Gotham.
Yeah, but he owned both, right? It was right across the hospital.
Yeah.
I always tell people the story. I used to be a dishwasher, right? I'm not no sticking dishwasher, but. I was at the bar. I was in the bar on a Saturday night, and I was cleaning the schooners out, you know, because they needed a busser in there.
Absolutely, schooners of beer.
Right.
God bless you. That's what they're famous for.
So I'm dipping them in the solution and then cleaning them. You know, they don't do no washing machine. You just dip them and clean them.
Here they're washing.
That's good to know now. It's beer, dude.
Crail's washing our schooners, dude.
Yeah, dude. I'm like, drink up. But I felt like somebody threw a big old cup of water on me. And I was like, what the hell, right? I turned around. I guess one dude had knocked the other dude in the head with one of them schooners. I mean, them things are like that thick.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, whoa, that's crazy. Oof. Took him right to hospital right across the street.
Oh, you just got to stagger over there and you're good. Right across the street from Beverly Hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of guys did that back coming out of that bar. That place was pretty crazy.
That place used to get packed, man.
Yes, it did. It was a fun place to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I think I had hair then.
I didn't like washing dishes there, though.
You gotta do what you gotta do, brother.
Dude, that whole scene is a whole different scene, man.
Yeah, it was good old days.
People
back
in the back be eating stuff off people's plate.
It's nasty.
Uh-huh. I'm telling you, dude.
Don't tell us all your secrets.
You don't even want to know the
things
stuff
we don't want to know about wrestling.
You don't even know what some of the stuff I know now.
We'll just keep it at that.
I know. I do want to eat today. you're telling me about the pizza and the cheese and the imitation cheese.
$5 pizza, it's not real cheese. I'm just telling you right now.
It's not queso fresco?
No, dude. By law, if they put real cheese on a pizza, they have to put a cheese pizza, like real cheese pizza. Usually when you buy cheese in a bag, like when you see those guys putting cheese in a bag, it's not real cheese.
So just by nature that we don't see very many pizzas say real cheese pizza, we should know that.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
That's why I think Domino's will say, you know, real cheese. Uh-huh. They have the little California, but if they don't say real cheese, they're not using real cheese.
Yes. I'm gonna ask him next time I call and order a pizza.
Yeah.
But listen, are you guys using real cheese or is it cheese in a bag?
Yeah, and the person on the phone that doesn't know is gonna be like, it's real cheese.
Can you please hold? Yeah. 45 minutes later, listen, what was your question?
Dude, it's like, seriously, it's like 45% oil and water and some cheese flavor. That's your favorite.
Cheese flavor.
That's your $5 cheese pizza.
Is this a Royale with cheese?
Enjoy your little Caesars.
Metric system.
Enjoy that Little Caesars.
There goes your Little Caesar sponsorship.
Yeah. Out the window. Hey, pizza.
Yeah. 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 Even worse, I don't even want to know about La Pizza Loca.
Oh, does that place still exist?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember when that was huge?
Only in the hood, dude, because they put chorizo, papa,
carne asada.
That's disgusting.
Mike knows how, Mike.
Oh, yeah. I took down a couple of Pizza Locas in my day.
Oh, yeah. That place is real close to Garfield High.
That's it, man.
You looked out for the delivery driver because he was driving a Datsun, right?
Before it was a Nissan.
With 13-inch Danes on it.
Before it was a Nissan. Yeah. It wasn't quite a Nissan. It was a Datsun.
I don't know. My local guy, he was driving a Suzuki Samurai.
Oh, that's old school, dude.
No,
those cars were the shit back. They were it back in the day.
With Inkies.
Yeah.
With Inkies.
Oh, man.
Inkies and stretch tires.
Some dude coming up with the Brat. Remember that car?
The Brat. Was that a Mitsubishi?
No, that was a Subaru.
It was like a Subaru. And it had two facing rear seats in the back.
In the back, yeah.
Was it like orange? Like an orange colored one?
Yeah, you can strap in the back seat of the bed of that thing.
Yes. Yeah. It was like a harness. Revolutionary half car, half truck, right? But you wanted to fit four people.
It was a futuristic hillbilly car.
Probably a big seller back there.
Yeah, no kidding. They still got some in the Midwest, I bet you.
Yeah, they're junk.
Oh. I'm from San Diego, man. We didn't do any of that down there.
No?
We didn't let any of that happen, yeah.
You've been out there your whole life?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty different now out there, though, huh?
Yeah.
But you guys got a bunch of cholos out there.
We do.
Go back to 93.
El Camino. We're El Camino people.
All Chevy.
Down there.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
Yeah. They don't mess around with Suzuki. Oh. Like
no import. No import.
Yeah.
No. Dude, what do you mean no import? They got the zone. The import zone right there, dude.
Yeah.
The only imports are other people crossing the border.
Yeah. They're like NAFTA, and they're like, hooray!
Yeah.
Big old trucks all bent in the middle. It's like no weight restriction.
Oh, man.
So you've been out San Diego your whole life. You like it?
Yeah. No, it's good. Yeah. It's good, man. Yeah. Who doesn't like San Diego, right?
It's just so different. I mean, I used to go out there for work back in like the early 90s, and you go there now, it's like, wow. It's like double the population.
Yeah.
It used to be like a quaint surfer town, you know?
And lots of good jiu-jitsu training out there.
It's like, oh, my God. It's grappling heaven and MMA heaven. Yeah, it's so many high-level jiu-jitsu guys out there. It's awesome.
Just our friends from BJJ Revolution Team, there's just so many... You know, guys that open schools out there.
Yeah.
You know, Clark Gracie, you know, Joel Tudor.
Yeah.
There are just so many places to go train.
Yeah. Dean Lister, Penny Thomas. I mean, there's just, yeah, exactly.
And not even including, you know, Ken Shamrock's gym that's been there one of the first ones, right?
That was one of the first ones. Yeah. They're not there anymore, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, so, did he close up shop or moved or?
Reno now or something?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It kind of fractured when they were having their thing with his wife and stuff. So, anyway. Yeah.
The place we train at, our headquarters is out there in Pacific Beach.
Yeah, Pacific Beach.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, PB Fight Center.
PBFightCenter.com.
Yeah, Rodrigo Manderos.
Yeah, PB's the place. PB's definitely a good place to go. Yeah.
You guys are all laughing like there's an inside joke we don't know about.
Jason loves San Diego.
Yeah, I do love San Diego.
And San Diego loves Jason.
It's true. It's true. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Wearing a Charger shirt.
Too. I love San Diego.
He's got his Charger jersey on.
By the way, I
want to
point just for the record that Crail is wearing the appropriate Raider attire, and
this is official Raider gear award just for you, Mike.
Absolutely. You know what? I'm very grateful. I love it. I'm a big time Raider fan, and I'm really feeling that shirt.
You are?
Yeah.
I'll let you have it. You want it?
You guys should do the swap right now.
I'll take it off now, Mike.
Do the swap. Do the swap.
No, and then Mike's wearing his Fight Me shirt, too.
I got one of those, too, under this one shirt. That's why I'm so willing to give you this shirt. I'm not even kidding about that.
I have my Fight Me shirt on, and it's a cool shirt. Totally back Fight Me. It's awesome.
Yeah. So before we go,
doing good things.
Let's throw out some websites for everyone out there. Steve, let's start with you. Your website and your Facebook, so people can take a look at the designs that you got.
Website where you can order Fight Me clothing from is www.fightmeclothing.com. Always check us out on Facebook. Facebook.com/ official Fight Me. We are the official Fight Me.
What else? Don't forget.
Any events that you're going to be doing or coming up?
Fight Me Girls.
Oh, yeah. You guys got to check out the Fight Me Girls for sure. Check out the Fight Me Girls at facebook.com/ Fight Me Girls with a Z.
You can stalk them on Twitter too, right?
Yeah, you can definitely stalk them on Twitter at Fight Me Girls with a Z. Yeah, for sure. Send them a message. They tweet back.
Twitter's like stalker heaven.
Oh, it
right?
sure is.
Yeah, you don't even need to do any work. You're just sitting there like, oh. I'm not on Twitter, by the way.
I'm not on Twitter either. Okay. I figured it out. Okay. How about you, Mike?
I haven't even figured out Facebook, dude, so let alone Twitter.
Mike's still on MySpace.
I'm still... never do
ever. Mike's like, contact me on MySpace.
Yeah, hit me up on my MySpace page. I got me and my friend Tom.
Me and Jason, you know. Jason. You can hit us up. We're cool.
Or at least Google them and check out the Yahoo Sports write-up on the beard. It's a good write-up.
Did you guys see the on the Underground? The whole he had a whole thing about him, and people, I mean, people love Mike, right? What's not to love? They're like, he looks like a rocket ship with his head taken off. Like, he looks like a giant schnauzer. I was like, you know, he does look like schnauzer with that beard.
He's the one that Jason would tell me, goes, hey Mike, look this up, and I don't really mess with the computer too much, and you know, looked up that thing, and I saw what the comments that were being made about the rocket ship ready to take off.
And if you look at his head a little bit, you're kind of like, yeah, I can see that.
You're right. I'm like looking at him. I'm like, you're right, dude.
It kind of comes to you. You're like,
even with the different colors, too, right?
Like the schnauzer. Was
everybody
classic.
Knows, like ZZ Top. Okay, we got that, but schnauzer? Yeah, you do.
Yeah, it was probably Jason that posted that up.
That's not true. I would have though. I wish I could have taken.
Well, I'll tell you how much his beard influenced me. We were at a bar yesterday, and the guy had, you know, not one as long, and we thought he had a Mike Beltran starter kit.
That is beautiful. That's gold. Mike Beltran starter kit. That's gold.
You gotta get that, man. You gotta sell that. The fights, dude.
I've never actually shaved, and I'm still trying to get there. Yeah, you can see. Yeah, it's not gonna work for me.
Whatever's working for Jason is working. He doesn't need any help, please.
Well, actually, for anyone who needed help finding that write up on Mike, I just posted a link to that Yahoo Sports page on our Facebook page. So go ahead and check that out there. And you can see some nice pictures.
Oh, yeah, you can't see it, but you must have trimmed it right there.
No, I think this one was a while back. This one was out.
Hey, maybe Sonia, maybe she can't put it up. Oh, okay.
And Jason, your contact info, where can people find you if you want them to look you up or
of the ring.
Yeah. Find you in the cage.
You know, I have a Facebook and I really haven't like opened it up yet, but I think I'm gonna. So I don't really have contact information.
Facebook will consume your life, you'll notice.
Yeah. Yes,
it will just eat your whole life away.
Yeah. Oh boy, there it is. Look at this.
Oh yeah, there we go.
Look at that look too.
We just put a picture up. We got this big flat screen TV in here. We just
He's
put a
got
picture
that
up.
Yosemite Sam look on his face. Doesn't he? They just somebody
varmints.
I know that there are definitely some Photoshoppers out there. If you could put a like Photoshop his face on Yosemite Sam with that back off kind of Yosemite.
I think they've already done that, man. Oh my God. Mike's all like, that's old news.
I would buy that shirt.
I'd buy a shirt with just that on it.
I know, right? Isn't that bad?
Look at Mike. How long ago was that?
Last year.
Yeah. Man, your beard's grown a lot in a year.
Yeah, like I said, it doesn't grow in my head.
It's only down to like your nipple level on there, dude. you're almost at the belly button now.
Mike is so funny. Mike was once, he was given a rules meeting to somebody, and he's like, basically going through the rules meeting. I'll keep it kind of private for the guy. I know the fighter that he was giving the rules meeting to, and he was like, man, that guy's scary. Like, I really thought, like, Mike has got a different level when the fighters go, and he's like, don't mess around. They're like, no, really, I'm not going to mess around. Have you seen that guy? He looks like Yosemite Sam.
Mike's serious about
Yeah, he's
about
not messing wrestling. Around. Yeah.
I know, I see him at the UFC. He wouldn't even turn around and say hi to me.
Yeah,
he's like, that. Like Mike. He's all like, I don't know this fool.
He's a Raider fan, so now that I know you're a bona fide Raider fan, what have given you the shout out?
No, you're thanks, man.
Hey, what's with those rumors about the Raiders coming back to L.A.? Is that going to happen?
I hope so.
Oh, that'll be great.
Yeah.
No, not because I'm a Raiders fan, but just because I would love for an L.A. team, for a team to come to L.A.
Yeah.
You know what? I'd be honest with you. I mean, that'd be awesome if the Raiders would come to L.A. I mean, just being selfish to watch the Raiders here in L.A., but more of a, you know, very traditional. I believe, you know, they started in Oakland. They need to stay in Oakland.
Bring back the Rams.
I'm not much of a Ram. I don't really care anything else other than the Raiders. But if they would come here, it'd definitely be awesome. But there's a big difference between the L.A. County fans, SoCal fans, and the NorCal fans. And they're just a different kind of a fan up north. They're real passionate about the sport, about the, you know, their football. And you come down here to L.A., it's become more of a gangster thing. And obviously, we got a good, solid Raider Nation foundation here. You know, it's really good, but you know, it just the kind of fans that go to the Raider games here in L.A. were retarded and doing stupid stuff and gang banging and, you know, gave a serious black eye to the true Raider fan. So
they don't have time to make shanks up there.
I mean, it's which is clear when we go down to San Diego, Raiders come down and play the Chargers, and you know, win or lose, you know, there's always all kinds of incidents happening down there. Those are the L.A. fans acting like idiots. So
he brought Jason. Nice,
you know, we got things to do down there. We got surfing, we got running, yeah, we got all that stuff. You guys,
Charger fans are the worst fans ever.
Yeah. You guys are just pissed, like you're just mad.
Yeah, we tend to lose.
You guys got
to
settle that right now.
I got on my running shoes, I'm ready to run.
I have to do the patented the Hulk Hogan leg drop on him.
Oh, yeah, dude,
right. He would. Yeah, it's true.
But old school, huh?
Old school, yeah. That's right. Hulk Hogan, brother.
Right on. Yeah, do the voice.
Do that voice.
What voice?
The voice.
The Hulk Hogan voice.
Oh, geez.
Please?
Let me tell you something, brother. Oh, yeah.
That's Mike's daughter.
No. Go ahead, Mike.
Do what? The Hulk Hogan voice? Impersonation of the Hulkster?
Yeah, why not?
Sir. Yeah, so we can close out the show.
We'll have you call in the show as him next time.
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I've been hanging and begging my Harley Davidson brother way too long, man. What you gonna do, brother? What you gonna do when the largest arms in the world and Hulkamania run wild on you?
That was good. Hulk will be proud.
Well done, sir. Well done.
Low applause. My bad. Hold on.
We made up for it here.
That was pretty good, dude. That's pretty good.
Right, you had that whole spiel down, like you knew it line for line. That's great.
The worst part. He's been rehearsing.
Yeah. How many times has he been practicing?
He probably told him.
Well, hey, he's in the mirror.
Tell me to say that.
You can't even see it. You should have seen his arms. He was all like, oh. He's all shaking.
What you going to do, me, Gene?
Big time Hulk Hogan fan.
Dude. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Who wasn't, dude?
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan, the camel clutch, dude, with the Iron Sheik and the good old days. That's awesome, man.
The Iron Sheik's funny nowadays. You ever heard him on the radio?
Straight cokehead, dude. Tore up, dude. Poor guy.
Dude, you got to hear him, dude. He's so funny.
I don't want to. I saw a Rowdy Piper the other day, and I was like,
really?
What happened there? No. I don't know you. I don't know you. I was just going to close my eyes.
Was it bad or what?
Yeah, it wasn't Rowdy Roddy Piper that you used to say.
Was he Rowdy Round Piper or something? What?
He was Rowdy Piper,
yeah. That's crazy.
Please say he still wasn't wearing that kilt.
No kilt.
He still had that shirt, though. It said Hot Rod, right?
I think he actually did still have
Yeah.
I thought Roddy Piper was awesome, man. What a shame. I hear horror stories like that, dude.
Or the Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, hands down the best. Hands down.
You like
Andre the Giant.
No way.
Andre the Giant, Ultimate Warrior, and Hulk Hogan.
When Warrior would do his interviews, just walking back and forth, Warrior.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You can't.
He was nuts.
Forget it.
Speaking of wrestlers, can we give a quick shout out?
For sure.
Let's give one out. Diamond Dallas Page, big, huge supporter of Fight Me. Throw up the rock, throw up the diamond. He owns that, by the way.
There's a name I haven't heard in years.
Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah.
That's old school. That's the homie right there.
Well, what was his move? The diamond cutter?
Diamond cutter. Yeah. He's actually, he's a huge supporter of MMA. He loves MMA. The guy's just, I mean, he's a great, great person besides his, you know, you don't see the personality that he was before. You know, very professional, very down-to-earth guy.
Well, those were all, I mean, he was... entertainment, you know.
Oh, he can turn it on when he wants to.
I'm sure,
he can turn it on when he wants to in a heartbeat, but he's a cool guy. So shout out to Diamond Dallas Page.
Right on.
Old school, huh?
Still Hulk Hogan's the man.
Yeah. He is the man. All right, keep going. Name us some other wrestlers, you know.
Old school wrestlers?
Yeah, let's go old school only.
The Junkyard Dog.
The JYD, man. He was bad. Yeah,
the Junkyard Dog was bad.
Coco Beware. The Bush with the Bushwhack Brothers. You know any Rich? Don't be looking him up.
Hold on, let me get Google
you
ready.
You ain't cheating, you ain't trying, Richie.
Yeah.
No, I was a big fan of Ultimate Warrior.
You were?
Huge.
Yeah.
Jason? Actually,
SOD?
Yeah, the Road Warriors.
Road Warriors.
Or the Nasty Boys.
Nasty Boys.
How about Jimmy Superfly Snuka?
Jimmy Superfly Snuka was
the
shit.
They look like Raider fans, didn't they? With those big old, like, you know, football pads with the spikes on them and everything.
The Road Warriors?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah, they look like Raider fans.
God bless him.
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Yes.
Oh, he was mad. Yes.
That was all that Saturday night Saturday morning WWF. You'd wake up early to watch it.
Oh yeah.
That was during when Hulk Hogan would go against Nikolai Volkoff and they had that whole Cold War thing going, right?
Yeah, with Sergeant Slaughter when he was all American.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Oh, you can't be Captain Lou.
Hacksaw.
Captain Lou
Albano. He had like rubber bands hanging out of his like cheeks and stuff.
Yeah. What's up with that dude?
I think he's gone. I think he died.
Who's that? Lou Albano.
I remember Yokozuna be sitting on people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, that guy definitely died.
Kamala. The Ugandan headhunter. Oh, I was a big-time wrestling fan.
Love it. Oh, was huge.
God. I don't think anyone. Who was not?
Hey, the only thing I used to have.
WWF. I go, that's old school.
That's old. Yeah. Before it was WWE, right? I was like,
yeah. There is an old school fan right
when
there.
When they changed that over, they're like, no, it's the World Wildlife Federation. You're like, really? Like, who knows who more?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
This whole lawsuit. Really?
But why? They must have had something going on for that organization to win with all the money that, you know, the WWE has, you know, that legal battle.
I'm sure they just had it locked up earlier. Yeah.
So it's WWE now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's ridiculous.
It's not the same.
When I see WWF, that's what I think of. I'm not thinking of World Wildlife.
Yeah, I don't go.
Think of that panda bear or whatever they got that logo.
I have no idea. Yeah.
They have a WWF. They have like a little panda bear.
Really? Yeah. That's cute.
Yeah, wrestling was awesome though. Just like Jason was a big wrestling fan, I wasn't.
Well, there was nothing else going on back then, right?
No,
that Lucha was Libre.
Yeah. MMA really has brought in a lot of those. You'll notice a lot of like the journalists and such. They're all MMA journalists, or you know, they were old wrestling journalists. A lot of the fans. It's kind of, you know, good crossover. And I don't watch wrestling anymore, but I kind of tapered off right around like the Ken Shamrock, the Ultimate, or not the Ultimate, where the Undertaker, and they would put on the MMA gloves, kind of incorporating a little bit. But interesting to see what's going to happen with the whole MMA, you know, is it going towards wrestling type shield sonas,
right.
Or you know,
or wrestling. Even watching Kurt Angle, like, you know, using some real wrestling moves, you know, when in the ring and stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Instead of just jumping off the top rope, he was doing some like legit moves.
No doubt those guys are all athletes, man. They all got some kind of a background, you know?
Well, you look at them, man. It's like, I mean, those guys are like 6 feet plus and they're doing this crazy stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's like when you go to a basketball game. I mean, you watch it on TV and you're like, all right. And then you go to a live one, you're like, this dude's like 6'7".
Yeah.
Right? He's a dude. 360 and dunk the ball.
You know? I'd rather not go to the live ones because when I'm watching it on TV, I'm like, I could do that. And then you go to a live one and you're like, there's just no way.
PlayStation.
Yeah. Do you remember back in the day watching as a kid and thinking like, that's real. I can't believe he hit him with a chair.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my, his forehead's bleeding.
It is kind of real.
Like, the way they backhand him on the chest.
Yeah.
I remember the honky tonk man when he would
grab the honky tonk man.
I used to watch that with my dad. He used to love the honky tonk man. And when he'd come out with the guitar and crack it on you, and it was like my dad thought it was like the coolest thing.
Oh, the Ric Flair was always the best for me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Ric Flair was bad.
Ric Flair's a legend, dude.
Yep.
He's awesome. Ravishing Rick Rude.
Oh yeah. Ravishing Rick Rude. Yeah.
Old school names.
That's
right there.
Crazy.
Yeah.
The Millionaire with Ted DiBiase.
Ted DiBiase.
Was he even a millionaire?
I don't know. No. Were those ones? No. I don't know what he
was. Like, he was the initial guy making it rain.
He was making it rain.
I think they were pesos.
They were pesos. Trickling. Hey, back then, the pesos were more than a dollar, though.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I don't know.
You could be making that
the dollar's not worth much these days either.
All right. Anything else, Rich?
I think that's it for this week, and everyone make sure to download the show on iTunes if you missed any part of it.
Oh, hey, did we find out, Mike, anything coming up? Anything want to promote? Any shout-outs or anything?
Just to my kids, and, you know, I got my daughter that's right here, and my son's at a buddy's pad, so.
Little Mikey.
Yeah, that's it. To all the fighters that are, you know, listening or involved in the sport, you know, train hard and be safe, guys. That's it.
Don't
God bless.
What about this whole thing of don't leave it in the hands of the... Oh, that's the judges. But I guess you guys are judging, too.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, we can get into that. That'll take a while to discuss, but, you know, talking about leaving the hands of the judges and stuff like that, that's for another show.
All right. Good show.
All right, till next week. Thanks for stopping in.
Yeah, thanks for... Jason took a big drive down here, so appreciate you coming down.
Of course. Yeah, thanks for having us.
We'll see you in class.
All right.
That was like, I'm gonna choke you.
Yeah. Crail out.
more boring jeans.